This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Millennials are significantly less likely than their elders to go to church. It's a fact that's been repeated often in recent years to explain the drop in attendance at Christian churches across the country. Well, Rob Lee is a millennial, and he's an ordained minister, and he says that the faithful in his generation have been lost in this narrative. Rob is a native of Statesville, North Carolina. He grew up steeped in the traditions and the community of his church, and he argues that there is more common ground between the church and millennials than the statistics show. He's written a book. It's called Stained Glass Millennials, and Rob has collected the stories of a handful of faithful millennials in this book to explain why they stayed in their churches and how those institutions can reach out to this generation. Rob Lee's a student at the Duke Divinity School, and he joins me now on the State of Things. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you so much.
Tell us about growing up in Statesville and about the church and what role it played in your life.
Well, growing up in Statesville, it's an all-America city. It's one of those places that everyone wants to grow up in. It's just a great town to grow up in North Carolina. But my parents always insisted that when the doors of the church were open, we would be there. We would always be participating on Wednesdays and Sundays and any other time with vacation Bible school and all this other activities. So no wonder I turned out attending seminary. But that being said, it also gave me a deep and abiding love for this institution that is deeply broken right now.
So talk more about that and the millennials you talk with, because one of the things that you want to do with this book is tell the stories that are not being told. There are people who are staying, and they would like you to know why.
Yeah, exactly. I think the thing, we're hearing a lot about alternative facts right now in the media. I wish we could hear a little bit more about alternative narratives, this idea that there is more to this than meets the eye, that the church is doing something great, that the church is working with millennials, that there are faithful millennials who are staying in the church, who are attending seminary across this great nation and across this continent, who are staying and wanting to be a part of God's community. And I think that is a narrative that needs to be heard. It is a narrative that needs to be proclaimed, because certainly we have problems that are, the list goes on and on. But I think the reality is that there is good being done, and that is something that needs to be celebrated.
So we want to get to these narratives and talk more about that, but let's find out about what your take is and their take on why millennials are leaving. You talked about it being broken and some of the problems. What are they?
Well, I think the problems are obvious, as they are in the political world. If you look at issues surrounding LGBTQ rights, the debates over human sexuality, the debates over politics, that politics takes more in the place of prevalence than the seed of Jesus Christ that we should be celebrating and honoring. We look at this as a political game, and ultimately that's one of the biggest problems. Millennials are just tired of it. They're tired of the drama. They're tired of the mishaps that the church has made across the centuries, across the years, but especially in the past 10 to 15 years of just dropping the ball.
Well, past 10 to 15, you could go back 1700 when it hitched its wagon, Christianity did, to Imperial Rome.
Yes.
And became a seat of power rather than the seat of powerlessness, which to many who read the Gospels, that was the message. It was about embracing powerlessness and finding your identity in a new way. The church becomes the imperial church. Is that not part of the problem, that the close connection between politics and church that has been nurtured for 1700 years is something that people are feeling deeply at this moment?
Well, I mean, if you look back at the history, specifically in the past 50 years, the church has, as you said, hitched its livelihood on the reality that it is the empire, that everybody goes to church, that everybody attends church on Sunday, and it's a great and joyous thing. But what we're seeing now is that that's dropping off, that people are no longer attending like they once used to, because they see the cracks in the ceiling. They see the cracks in the hallways and in the walls of the church. Church and see that there are problems that the church is not addressing. And so it's our job as millennial people of faith, as baby boomers, as Gen Xers alike, to say that, yes, we have our problems, but we are a community who loves deeply, who loves fiercely, and who works together to make this a new and different work in the life of the church.
And that's an important point that you're making. These are not people who are turning their backs on those problems or who feel that their identity is also connected. They'd like to remain connected to that ancient identity. Stephen Coles is one of the examples of someone who is hurt by the church and is faithful to it. Tell us his story.
Well, Stephen Coles is a student at Duke Divinity School and a good friend of mine. And we met our first year of divinity school, and he has this incredible story in the book of facing sexual assault, of facing harassment, because he is an LGBTQ person of faith, because he struggles with all the issues that we struggle with in ordination processes and going through those processes. he's just a normal human being who simply wants to love the church, and for some reason the church doesn't want to love him back. And I think that is one of the most grievous sins that we could ever commit as a church, because Stephen is an incredible human being who has so much love to give the church, so much love to give to the world. And we are turning our back on him simply because of who God created him to be.
But he doesn't turn his back on the church.
But he doesn't turn his back on the church, and that's the beautiful part about it. He is persistent. Yeah. He is a persistent person who believes that the church has a story to tell, and he wants to be a part of that story. And if we have that persistence in our own lives, regardless of what situations we face, regardless of what our own stories are, if we have that persistence to say, yes, the church is broken, but by God, I'm going to work to fix it, the church would look like a different animal right now.
Why work within the church? Again, some of the, I'm going to generalize here and give you a schematic argument about those millennials who would say, I am faithful to a spiritual tradition. I have deep questions about the ultimate source of power and unity and all of those deep questions. I can't do it within the walls of the church. The dogma, the doctrine, and the politics have driven me out. So I'm going to do everything Stephen wants to do, create that better world with the principles that I brought with me outside the walls.
Well, that's really nice, and I respect that. I have great respect for those people who are spiritual but not religious. But I also feel like there's something to be said about doing that within community. You cannot begin to create these changes that we seek as millennials within the church, as millennials outside the church, without community. You can't do it alone. This is not a one-way show. And if you look at the way that Jesus surrounded himself with disciples and all these different people in his ministry, even though he confronted the religious elite, he did it so in community. He did so within the confines of a tradition, his Jewish faith. And so I think the same can be said for us, that even though we are confronting these things within the realm of Christianity, we are doing so in new and different ways, just like Jesus did.
Would that not mean, though, couldn't it mean creating new communities, again, drawing on the principles and the teachings, but the dogma, the doctrine, that may have to change, the vestments may have to change, our architecture might have to change, but the principles we'll remain faithful to, and we might not call ourselves Methodist or Catholics anymore?
Well, I'm a person who loves his vestments, but I also know that those don't work for everyone. And so I think what we have to realize is that the church is working and changing and doing different things. And that doesn't mean we have to have a laser rock show every Sunday. But what that does mean is we have to reexamine what those robes mean for people, just to give vestments. What does that mean? Why do we do what we do? I think if people learned why we did what we did in church, it would be a different story, instead of just saying this is how we've always done it and this is the way it's always going to be.
Tell us Rhody's story, Rhody Maston's story.
Rhody is another friend of mine at the Divinity School at Duke, who I interviewed in the book. And Rhody is a cooperative Baptist, the tradition that I'm ordained in. And that tradition came out of the Southern Baptist Convention that originally wouldn't ordain women, and still to this day does not ordain women. And so the cooperative Baptist broke off and kind of claimed that as their issue, that they would ordain women. And Rhody is this force of nature to be reckoned with. And she talks about in her story this idea that the church, you just can't get the same things that you get at church elsewhere. You can go out and bake bread with your grandmother, but you can't get the sacraments outside of the church. And if indeed the church is dying, then she quotes scripture and compares it to a story in the Gospel of Mark, where she talks about a little girl get up, that this is the time for the church to get up and to be the church that it is supposed to be.
And what would that mean? What would that look like to you?
You know, I think that looks like engaging millennials. I think that looks like going outside the walls and participating in things like Durham Can and other ministries within Durham area, or across North Carolina. There's so many great ministries going on that are doing enormous things outside the walls of the church, but also maintaining a sense of hope and resiliency within the walls of the church, that though numbers may be declining, that though finances may not be what they used to be, that God still has a plan and God is not done with us yet.
There is a way in which church has become more than church, more than spiritual teaching. It is a social and a political identity for many, and that identity carries with it a memory. So for marginalized groups, hard to belong to the church, how would you reach out and welcome them? And again, given the past, it's a pretty difficult past for some people.
It's a tough road. It is a very tough road for many people who've been hurt by the church, for many people who've been marginalized, who've been put as unlovable or untouchable. But I'm reminded that the Jesus that I serve and the Jesus in the churches that I know reaches out and touches us, just like he touched that woman in March Gospel, or as the woman touched her, as we reach out, so does Jesus reach out to us. And I think that that's a beautiful narrative in which we can look and see that this Jesus fellow challenged even the most comfortable and comforted the most challenged. Well, and I think – and what I'm getting at is that it may be hard to walk that road of faith and say, you know, I've messed up as a church, but we're willing to make a difference. But it's the necessary road. It's the road that we must take.
And remember that church is populated by, and in many cases run by, people who have a very different view. This is not a given that even though Rob Lee thinks we need to open up and be more open about these ideas, there are many people who say the church would not be the church if we break this rule down, if we lose this rule.
Well, I completely understand that and respect that, but I also know that Jesus was not one to follow the rules, and it ultimately got him crucified. So I think that if we're going to be these people who challenge the status quo, who challenge the church itself, we must be prepared for the consequences. And, you know, there'd be plenty of tweets or texts or Facebook messages about how I get this wrong. But ultimately, we're just trying to make a difference in the world. And this is what this book is about. It's about millennials making a difference in the church for the sake of the world.
Do you see millennials? I would expect that those who remain are, they have a broad range of political views.
Yeah. I interview someone in the book, Brent Murphy, who is very different from me, who has very different views on different ideas of church and ways of doing church and political views than I do. But I think the diversity is not what will kill us. What will kill us is a lack of conversation and a lack of willingness to come to the table, because the table should be large. And if we don't have enough room, we need to get a bigger table.
There are critics of church who will say, on the one hand, the church hasn't kept up with the times, has not been progressive enough or faithful enough to the message of Jesus, the inclusive message of Jesus, and therefore needs to be more engaged and more active in the politics of inclusion. There are others who say, not necessarily on the contrary, but say that what the church has really failed to do is bring forward the mystical, the deeper and the less tangible, the less materialistic teachings that are universal, both in Jesus and other teachers. And churches have failed to do that as well. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think the thing that we can reach to is one example that I give a lot of the times is my fiance Stephanie participated in the Women's March in Raleigh recently, back in January. And I was amazed that she decided to write a Bible verse on her placard that she took with her. Because for her as a millennial, faith is no longer this thing that is to be kept back, to be kept in a way of doing things that is the old way. But this is a new way of doing church, a way that is outside of the walls, but also changing the inside as well. So she's challenging not only the people who would disagree with her, but the people who agree with her and may not see the church as valid or validated in that situation. So she's challenging on multiple levels. And that's a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Is this a kind of an ecumenical project? In other words, is this something that you would have to do as an ordained minister in the United Church of Christ? You work with your folks, Catholics work with theirs, or is this something that you need to talk over the walls about?
Well, I'm a big believer in conversation. As my fiance Stephanie's Catholic, so I'm working through conversations on that every day of my life, as we've talked about, Frank. But I think that the reality of it is that we have to begin a conversation in our own local communities, whether that's in the United Church of Christ, the Cooperative Baptist Fellowship, the United Methodist Church, the Catholic Church, whatever your tradition may be, and then take that conversation to the streets, take that conversation to your other faith communities, to even interreligious communities, and say, what are you doing to engage millennials, people that are young and wanting answers? Because ultimately, that's what people need, are answers to these really tough questions. And the church has been in a place for the past 1,700 years, as we've said, to give those answers. Whether we've always gotten it right, I don't know. But my hope is that for the next 1,700, we might get them right.
But the denominations you've named puts a finger, I think, on another issue that you'd have to face, and that is the inherent divisions. I mean, once you call yourself a church and give yourself a name, that does describe you over and against some other group, even if you claim common ground. And that's precisely the kind of division that many would say Jesus came to eradicate.
Yes, I think you're right on that. And my mom famously always tells me every time I tell her about denominations, well, when we all get to heaven, there aren't going to be any denominations. And I firmly believe that. But we are a human institution, and there are divisions. And if you want a perfect system, you're not going to find that in the church. But what you are going to find, hopefully, is an authentic and a vulnerable system that is willing to admit its faults. At least that's my hope. At least that's what the churches that I work with. They're willing to admit their faults. They're willing to work through these issues and say to one another, we may not always get it right. We may not always agree, but by God, we're going to work together.
There is, though, an inherent tension in that, isn't there, in that churches do an awful lot of good, and they do assemble people around an idea that can then lead to much, much good. And I think the Christopher Hitchens and the Dawkins of the world fail to recognize some of the great, the goodness that's done. But they are institutions, and when you talk about vulnerability, once you build a wall and you write a doctrine, you start to defend. And suddenly vulnerability for anyone with an institution, for anyone with a board of directors, becomes a liability. Isn't that an inherent tension in the group itself?
Well, I think the gospel is full of inherent tensions. And I think the reality is that we have to be people who live inside those tensions. That, yes, it's really difficult to be transparent and authentic and vulnerable when denominations are fighting over issues of human rights and racism and sexism and homophobia. But when we let those walls down, when we tear down those walls, that's when conversation can begin.
But isn't that, when you talk about tearing down the walls, I have to ask you, isn't that eliminating the church? Isn't that when
No.
you tear down the wall? What's the difference between tearing down the wall and not being a church?
I think the difference is that the church remains in spite of its lack of walls. The church does its best work when it realizes that it's not a building on Duke Street. It's a place that is working together on Duke Street to make a difference. You know, I have a former associate pastor who would often give a benediction. As you leave this church on Broad Street, where my home church is, may you go and be the church. And that's my hope, is that as people leave this place, as they go from wherever they are, they may be the church for this broken and hurting world, because that is ultimately our mission. That is ultimately the great commission that came from Jesus himself.
Do you see it turning around? Do you see greater numbers? I mean, I know it doesn't necessarily have to be measured in that way, but part of the story here is the loss of millennials. Do you see things turning around anytime?
You know, if you look at the history, it's possible. If you look at the future, it's possible. And it's my hope that that possibility will turn into a reality. Now, I can't predict the future, but I do know that the Lord of my life has called me to proclaim that there is a different way of doing things. And that different way of doing things is our calling, our mission, and our reality for this time and place.
Is there anything about global culture and the fact that we can now communicate beyond our languages and beyond our national boundaries that can make this a different kind of a project?
Well, it's certainly a different conversation. One of the persons that I interviewed in the book, I don't even know personally, Morgan Bell. He's a Canadian. He's with the United Church of Canada, but we met through Facebook, and I think that's a beautiful tool. Now, whether it's an effective tool all the time, I don't think so. As we just heard in the last segment, that it can provide for a lot of problems. But I think that it can also provide for a lot of good and a lot of missional opportunities for the church.
Rob Lee, what a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Rob Lee is an ordained minister and a student at Duke University Divinity School. His book is called Stained Glass Millennials, and you can find out more about it at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, a conversation with longtime Broadway star Ben Vereen. Stay tuned.